Some crimes are never forgotten, others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.
On today's show, $2,000 recurring stimulus checks. It's gaining ground in Washington this morning. Have you signed the petition? It's over 2 million people now. And there are members of the Democratic Party that are pushing President Biden on this issue. The rumblings in Washington. Plus, President Biden hinting of another round of stimulus might be coming. He's seen the economic data, and there are, again, rumblings among Washington aides this morning about a possible fourth stimulus check. So we'll see whether or not that's a happen. Will he get pushback from Republicans? Who knows? And gold is about to have its moment in the sun. We're going to have a gold expert on the show who just bought up thousands of acres of gold-producing land in Nevada. And these mines that have already produced 20 million ounces of gold. You don't want to miss this. We're going to have an interesting interview today on the show. And Warren Buffett was talking a lot this weekend. He thinks those retail investors could bring down the system. You know, those people living on Robinhood, you know, all the Robinhood traders, all of them. Plus, he had some thoughts on cryptocurrency. He had a lot to say on that. So we will talk all about that and more on the show today. Morning Invest starts right now. Welcome to Morning Invest. I'm Clayton Morris. This is the show that helps you make money. We are live every morning right here at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. So come over and check us out wherever you want to watch your favorite content. YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, TikTok, doesn't matter. We try to be everywhere. But we're here at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. So hit that subscribe button and weigh in. We're trying a little new system here. So I hope you like it. We're trying a whole new software. So David in our control booth gets to, you know, I don't know. How's this working? Does it look good so far?
Yeah, I'm liking it so far.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it looks good. So we'll have to play with some different things. So if we have any little technical issues, we apologize, but we're playing with some new software. That way we can see if we want to throw up some comments right here on the screen live during the show about anything, you know, we can just throw them up here like this. Can you pick one up and just go boom and throw it right up here on the screen?
Boom.
Peter Finch, that's right. We were talking in the pre-show about who was in the movie Network. Yeah, it was Peter Finch, that's right. I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. Get up from your seats and go to your windows and shout. I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore.
This is what somebody said, Network and William Holden, Faye Dunaway, and Albert Finney.
Albert. So it's not Albert Finney. It's Peter Finch.
Huh.
Peter
Finch. All these years.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, well, at least that's what I'm pretty sure it's Peter Finch. I'm almost certain it is. All right. Hey, let's check the markets, shall we? It's been a crazy weekend for crypto. So let's take a look at the markets today. BTC. Let's look at Bitcoin this morning. BTC. I know, David, look, see, here's right where, let me see if I zoom in here. This is where David sold right here. David sold Bitcoin right here.
Mm-hmm.
Should have held, my friend, because now Bitcoin this morning up to 58. And now look, once Bitcoin and Ethereum start to consolidate a little bit, that's when you're going to see a lot of these other altcoins starting to pop. But it's been a little crazy. All eyes have been on Bitcoin and Ethereum. So again, once Bitcoin just sort of settles down, that's what's going to happen. Let's look at Ethereum. Ethereum is exploding, my friends. Look, if you've been watching this show for any length of time, even if you've only been new here, you just joined us, you were here for the first time last week, and you were seeing that I invested heavily into Ethereum last week when it was down around $2,100. $2,100. Now this morning it's at $3,143 and continuing its upper trend. I mean, this is 189% increase. And there is no shortage in sight for this. And, you know, I think, again, there's a number of, you know, Ethereum bulls who are seeing this racing up towards 4,000. I wouldn't be surprised in short amount of time we hit 4,000 on Ethereum. Just keeps going. Also this weekend, well, actually this morning, I made a big purchase into Polk, BTC. Now, this is one to watch because this morning, this is before the show, I bought into Polk right around here, and I sent out an alert. If you're following me on Public or you're following me on some of the other platforms, I sent out an alert to keep an eye on this coin because it was on a parabolic upswing this morning. And we made some good money this morning on this in a short amount of time. This is Polk BTC. So this ran up. Now it's heading into this flag pattern over here. And we'll wait to see if this breaks out again. But this could be running up to previous session highs. So keep your eye on Polk BTC as an altcoin. Let's check gold too, because we're going to talk gold on the show today. And how do I get that over on that screen now? I'm so bad at this now. Okay, there we go. Okay, that's how we do it. So there's gold. So gold prices up. Last week, of course, it was in the 1760, 1770 range on its way up, and silver also on its way up. So let's keep our eye on these precious metals. Again, we're going to have a gold expert coming up in a little while, and a lot of gold bulls believe this is going to be hitting $2,000 as this U.S. dollar hits these hyperinflation points. So again, gold on its way up. All right, let's look at the week ahead. You know, it's Monday, and so we have got economic data that's going to be hitting this week. The April jobs report will drop on Friday. The most bullish economists think that the U.S. economy could have added upwards of 1 million new jobs last month. Economists say payrolls in April could easily reach a million jobs after 916,000 jobs were added in March. So estimates range from about 700,000 to about 2.1 million from Jefferies economists. So good news on the economy on jobs fronts as we continue to add more and more. But there is, of course, still data showing that so many businesses have been permanently closed. So yes, it's good news on the one hand. Maybe you're having middle income jobs coming back. I'd love to hear in the chat, let me know, like, have you seen more job opportunities opening up for you? What about a job that has been closed? Many of you lost your job. Are you seeing that these businesses are now able to reopen, or they're coming back? Or has your job permanently been lost? Again, let me know in the chat. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on that. And also earnings this week. There are huge earnings report this week for the week, whether you're interested in vaccine news. Or like, if you really want to know, I'm curious to see. This week, we're going to hear Moderna, Pfizer, CVS. Here's just a thought. How many of you think that Moderna is going to do well? Pfizer and CVS. Again, all of the conspiracy theorists out there, like these companies, of course, all of the vaccine producers, they're about to report their earnings this week. How well do you think they did? Just throwing it out there. Let me know in the chat what you think. Also, we're seeing these travel stocks, you know, airlines are roaring back. And Hilton, Book Holdings, Expedia, Uber, all of these businesses are going to report earnings as they're starting to bounce back. So we'll be watching that as well. And then some of the stay-at-home stocks also are going to report earnings. And they've been getting hit hard because people are starting to go out and leave home now, like Roku, Square, Peloton, Etsy, some of these. And eBay also had some down earnings. So we're going to see from Peloton and those guys this week as people start leaving the house. Kristen Swenson says, a lot of marketing jobs are available if you're willing to work in an office 5 days for around $9 an hour in Texas. Yeah. You want to work 40 hours a week. Dumb and Dumber reference. My kids use that line all the time and they have no idea what they're talking about. They're like, Daddy, why is that funny? Well, if you want to work 40 hours a week, can't find a job. Heather Smith says, I live in Missouri and there are jobs popping up, but most require mask wearing, even the non-essential ones. Look, I think that's going to be the new normal, and I think it's going to be up to each company what they do. We have this mask mandate that's been lifted so that if you're in a public space now in a large group of people, then you don't have to wear a mask. I mean, unless it's in a large group of people. But Brenda McNair says, there's so many jobs here and no one to work. I would rather sit at home. A lot would rather sit at home. They get paid more. Yeah. Well, I hope that's not the case. I mean, we've seen in the data when people are getting stimulus, they're actually more encouraged to work. Janine Cook says, here you can be a school bus driver. They will train you. The top pay, they say, is $10 an hour. $10 an hour to be a school bus driver. Let's dive into our top story this morning. No, yeah. No, no way.
That'd be like way worse than being an Uber driver, and Uber drivers make more. You know what I mean? If you had a choice of being a bus driver and Uber driver, and it was $10 an hour for a bus driver, I'd choose Uber.
Why? Just because you don't have to deal with the crazy kids?
Yeah. I mean, if you're dealing with kids and you're taking on that much risk and driving and everything, I mean, that should at least, very minimum, $20 an hour I'd need.
Yeah. I couldn't handle that. And I'm not good at yelling at people unless I get in that passive aggressive mode, you know, like that, then I yell at someone, but I couldn't, like if all the kids were yelling, I couldn't just start, hey guys, get back down there, sit down. I just couldn't do that.
I just park the bus and get off and say, you kids are on your own. Bye. I'm going home.
Here are the keys.
Yeah.
Take the keys. You're gone. All right, let's talk about our top story this morning. It is stimulus. A petition calling on the government to give out regular monthly stimulus checks has now more than 2 million signatures on it. That's right. The petition calls for $2,000 a month in stimulus money per month, per adult, plus $1,000 per child for the duration of the COVID crisis. And a number of Senate Democrats are on board with this. They've supported this idea, but it's not been introduced as legislation yet. Since the last payments went out, the $1,400 payments went out in March. But Americans have had three stimulus payments during the pandemic. We've had the $1,200, we'd have the $600, the $1,400. But the media and economists are all telling us that the economy is roaring back. So how can we drum up more support for the stimulus when it would seem that the economy is in a resurgence? Well, what do you think? You know, will this gain any traction? Wall Street right now is... you know, just getting high on itself over all of this record growth. And I think if you want to, you know, support this, there is a petition. We'll link it in our show notes today so you can go and sign it. We also included it in our email newsletter this morning. How many of you, show of hands, are subscribers to our Morning Invest newsletter? But the petition is pretty powerful. And when you have that many millions of people pushing members of Congress in that direction, and you have members of Congress who are now meeting with the president today, specifically on this next round of infrastructure. They're back to business today, and they're going to be starting this process of having discussions about it. So we're going to get there. We're going to talk more about stimulus in just a moment and why the president might be leaning in that direction towards additional stimulus. But I want to tell you about our friends over at Honey first. This is how you can save some money, by the way. We all shop online, right? And we've all seen that promo code field that was just taunting us at checkout, and you feel bad that you don't have a promo code. Do you ever do that? You're like, oh, I wish I was one of those people that had a promo code. Well, that's what Honey does. It manually searches for coupon codes right for you. You don't have to do anything. It's a free shopping tool that scours the internet for promo codes and applies the best ones it finds to your cart. It's that simple how it works. Very, very simple. And Honey supports over 30,000 stores online. They range from everything from tech and gaming products to popular fashion brands and even food delivery. I actually, when I was checking out the other day buying some furniture, I used Honey and I managed to get 10% off on my furniture order. So imagine you're shopping on one of your favorite sites and all of a sudden a little Honey button drops down and all you have to do is click apply coupons. That's all you have to do. Wait a few seconds as Honey searches for coupons it can find for that site. If Honey finds a working coupon, you'll watch the prices drop. It's that simple. So here's how you do it. All you need to do is just go to this website, Join Honey. Join Honey. It's not Honey. You got to go to joinhoney.com/invest. That's joinhoney.com/invest and download it today for free. For free. All right, let's talk about the stimulus. President Biden now. Over the weekend, some interesting buzz emerging from the White House and the White House press corps. Fourth stimulus check? Biden says the money is making a difference and is open to potential additional stimulus checks. Now, he's seen what's already happening in the economy thanks to this round of stimulus. But will Biden come out in favor of a fourth stimulus check? He made a bunch of positive signs about this in his speech to Congress. And it may suggest that he's open to providing another round, but he hasn't addressed it specifically just yet. It's like he might be keeping his powder dry. Instead, he's been proposing other relief, but it may get rolled in to this next round of infrastructure, this massive infrastructure, because a number of key Democrats, especially on the Senate Banking Committee and otherwise, have said they want additional stimulus checks as part of the infrastructure package. For example, he wants to stretch out a temporary expansion of that child tax credit that'll give families monthly payments, sort of another kind of stimulus check if you think about it, for every up to $300 per child during the second half of this year per month. He did tell Congress that he wants to extend the new credit at least through the year 2025. That's going to help more than 65 million children and help cut child care poverty in half. I hope that also, as Democrats are pushing for this next round of stimulus check, that they also then push to make sure that these child tax credits don't expire in 2025, but they get pushed out even further beyond 2025. Why stop it? Why sunset? I still don't understand why you would sunset this thing. Like, if you're saying, hey, this is going to eliminate child poverty or going to cut it in half, why would you sunset this thing to like 2024 or 2025 and then remove it? Give people this lifeline and then suddenly pull the wool out, you know, this is bad metaphors. Pull the wool out from under them, right? That's wrong. Pull the rug out from under them. You put the wool over someone's eyes, right? Is that what you do?
Yes, you pull the wool over someone's eyes.
You put the wool over someone's eyes.
Pull.
And you,
that's what I always heard. Pull the wool.
Pull. But you pull the rug out from someone, right?
Yes.
Pull the rug out. Okay.
I think you pull both. Both of them are usually wool.
Right. Pull the wool. I can never remember what it is. So how are we going to, you know, how are we going to do this? I mean, if Democrats are meeting today, and they're going to also be meeting with Republicans, they're going to be sitting down, starting to lay out this infrastructure package. The goal is to try to have it written up by Memorial Day. So the real work starts today on this infrastructure plan and stimulus package. Now, if the president is indicating to those who will pay attention that he really likes this economic data, and who doesn't like it? You know, we now know that as a result of all of this stimulus money, businesses have been able to regain their foothold. You know, a number of people have been able to return to work. Stock market is happy. Families that have cash in their pockets is at an all-time high in the United States. And we're seeing the numbers. I mean, we're seeing the overall numbers over the past week. So I don't know how you could wrap your head around this any other way than to say this is actually people. I see someone saying, Edwin says, I just keep on working. I just keep on working. I haven't been yet. Again, there's so many people that are still on the margins. You know, there are so many people. There's, you know, anywhere from 15 to 20 million people that are still sitting there waiting on help. But how are we going to pay for all this, right? It's going to be taxes. Linda Martin says the stimulus money is going back to the corporations that need to pay their fair share of taxes. Yeah, exactly. But are they going to pay their fair share of taxes, Linda? That's the real question. And you're hearing over the past few days, you're hearing from Republicans, and you're all weekend, I got to hear from Republicans that are saying corporate tax, it's going to stifle innovation in the United States. It's just going to be crushing, right? It's going to reduce the number of jobs that are out there. It's going to hurt Americans. And they all want to say, when President Trump cut taxes, we saw a boom in the economy. Well, turns out that's garbage, because now we have new data out this morning from the Tax Policy Institute, which basically shows that's a total lie, that didn't actually happen, that Americans actually weren't helped by the Trump tax cuts at all. And Martha Raddatz this weekend managed to call out Senator Barrasso on that very, very point Bill Cassidy was on Chris Wallace's show, and he called him out about this because Republicans are continuing to push forward on this false narrative about Trump tax cuts helped working class people.
To help. As I talked about with Ms. Rouse, there's not only a disagreement about spending, there's also a disagreement about how you're going to pay for it. And one of the main Republican objections to the Biden plan is it would undo much of the Trump tax cuts. But I want to take a look at those tax cuts. According to the Tax Policy Center, the average first-year tax cut for a household making less than $25,000, the average tax cut was just $60. The average tax cut for a household making $3.4 million was $193,000. And contrary to talk that it will pay for itself, the Trump tax cuts are now projected to add $1.5 trillion to the deficit over 10 years. Senator, of the 2 million tax filers in Louisiana, only 14,000 of them were paying more, filing gross income of more than $500,000. So what's wrong with raising the top tax rate to where it was during the Bush 43 and Obama administrations in order to help the working and middle class?
If all you do is look at first degree effects, Chris, you can make a point like that. It sounds just like President Biden speaking to Congress. And I'm not accusing you, I'm just pointing that out. If you look at the overall effect, the aspiration of this Biden administration is to return to the economy we had before COVID, where we had record low unemployment, which means record high employment for African Americans, veterans, women, Hispanics, the disabled, high school dropouts, with wage growth disproportionately in the lower quintiles of the income structure. That's where we were seeing the economy really help. Now, that was all part of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act bill. You can't separate them. And so if you want to say, my gosh, these people are making more money, why don't we return and keep the Tax Cut and Jobs Act? That's the flip side of the question you're asking. And I think that flip side is the part that should be emphasized.
But the argument is, and there certainly is some data to indicate, that the Trump tax cuts benefited the wealthy and corporations more than they did the working and middle class. And I want to play a bit of what President Biden said to Congress on Wednesday. Here he is.
The American Jobs Plan is a blue-collar blueprint to build America. That's what it is.
The president says that his plan is going to help the working and middle class by making the corporations and the wealthy, people over $400,000 a year, pay more. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, so if you raise, academics would say, if you raise taxes on corporations, you have lower wages, you have less investment, and you hurt shareholders. Think pension funds. Now, if it's okay to have lower wages for working people, it's a blue collar thing. If it's okay to have less investment, it's a blue collar thing. But if you want higher wages, if you want more investment, if you want more efficient deployment of capital, then it's anti-blue collar. We saw under the Tax Cut and Jobs Act bill a blue collar working bill. Investment, increased wages among the lower quintiles of Americans,
sure you did,
with fuller employment. That's the recipe for success, not Trickle taking down. Trillions and trickling it through Democratic interest groups and hopefully some of it getting down to the folks that you know you want to help.
All right.
Yeah. So the Trump tax cuts, that was it was trickle down to you, right? Do you feel like you really, really were helped by that? Well, you know, even if you saw like a $50 tax cut on your overall take-home pay, the large percentage of which added $1.5 trillion to the national debt, and wealthy people saw the brunt of this and benefited the most from it. So this argument that the Trump tax cuts was a blue-collar tax cut is just hilarious. It's laughable. But they get away with trying to say, I mean, unless people call them out, like Senator Barrasso tried to say that this infrastructure package, which they're meeting on today, you know, are we going to see actual childcare pieces in this infrastructure? Will we see schools? Will we see education? Will we see everything, you know, besides just roads and bridges, which is all that Republicans want to talk about? And once again, Senator John Barrasso took the strategy of trying to say that only 6% of this infrastructure bill actually goes to infrastructure, which has now been debunked. But this is the talking point that you're going to hear from Mitch McConnell and other Republicans, even though this has now been debunked. Take a listen.
The problem is, of course, that President Biden's proposal, only 6% of the money actually goes for roads and bridges. And they have more money for electric cars than they do for all of those other things.
Senator, I got to stop you there. The 6% for roads and bridges figures you and other GOP leaders have cited has been fact-checked multiple times. The total amount for what you have called traditional infrastructure, roads, bridges, rails, airports, waterways, public transit, is more than 25% of the Biden plan. So do you want more?
Ouch. We need more journalists that can like fact check someone in real time. Like, you're just going to go on the air and you're going to spout BS. You're going to say, stand there and say that only 6% of the Biden infrastructure plan goes to this thing. It's not true. It's been
well, the only reason they do it's because they get away with it. They get away with it every time. It's only when a journalist decides to stand up and go against the establishment that they don't get away with it. And it's rare.
It's rare. So good on Martha for sticking up to Senator Barrasso for just spewing garbage like that. Good for her. Good for her on that. We've got a lot more to get to. We're going to be talking gold. You do not want to miss our interview next. It's unbelievable where some of these biggest gold producers are focusing their attention once again, because we are about to see. Could we see? Let me look at gold prices this morning. Again, up even higher since we started this morning. As this government currency, this fiat currency, if you have your money in the U.S. dollar or any fiat currency, I don't know what's wrong with you. Like, I've been warning you and warning you and warning you. If you have your money right now in U.S. dollars, trouble is coming. Trouble is coming, my friends. And so we're going to have a really important interview on gold in just a moment. But first, I got to tell you about our friends over at Netgear and what they're doing for Wi-Fi. The best Wi-Fi. Is your Wi-Fi struggling to keep up with your streaming, your work, your gaming, your video calling, and more? What about all at once? When you're connected to the world by Wi-Fi, be sure it's the best. So bring your Wi-Fi up to speed with Orbi, their Wi-Fi 6 from Netgear. Orbi Wi-Fi 6 is the best and the latest in Wi-Fi. It's a masterpiece of connectivity. It covers your entire home with unmatched speeds and performance. For more devices than ever before, in any part of your house, it creates a beautiful, like, big mesh network. With advanced Wi-Fi, you're going to want it everywhere. Ready for the best Wi-Fi ever? Save 10% on America's number one choice for Wi-Fi at netgear.com/best Wi-Fi and use the promo code MORNING10, MORNING10. There it is on your screen.
I just ordered that this weekend.
You did?
Yeah, I got one coming because I've been searching for... So I have drop zones in my house and I use this system that came in, pre-installed in the house, and... For some reason, Sonos doesn't like the way that it's connected. So I did a lot of research this weekend, and when I do research, I go down a huge rabbit hole, and the Orbeez came out the best every time, like over Eero and stuff, as far as distance, as far as the fact that you can run. I got a 2 gigabit internet connection coming in here, and this will support the 2 gigabits where others won't. So it's future proofed as well. So it's just like really the top of the line. It's a little expensive, but you do get like full coverage. I mean, I saw people that are very reputable. Phil Nickinson.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I did watch a long review from him. So I ordered it. So it Sweet. Should be here Wednesday. So I'll set it up and give you some feedback when I get it done.
Awesome. So yes, best Wi-Fi ever, and get 10% off. netgear.com/best Wi-Fi. That's the URL you have to go to, netgear.com/best Wi-Fi, and use the code MORNING10 to get 10% off. And David will report back to us on how great it is. They're making some excellent stuff at Netgear. All know that gold is on the move, both because inflation is rising and because the Federal Reserve is going to let it run hot, and we haven't seen anything yet. That's why investors are starting to look more closely at gold than ever before, and why we could see price targets over $2,000, even $5,000 in the next few years. So where then is the biggest source of gold? Where is it? I'll give you a hint. It's in the same state as Las Vegas. That's right. Nevada is the gold capital. Our next guest is Colin Cotelli. He's the founder of a gold company, which is owned in part by Eric Sprott, a self-made billionaire, and Rob McEwen, who's another Canadian tycoon. Both of them trusted Colin, and this stock has rallied 400% since the summer. Well, now Colin is back with a new vengeance and a brand new company, and it's still totally under the radar right now in what's known as Elephant Country, which you'll learn all about this in a minute. And I can tell you that I know personally a group of people that owns a large stake in this one, and they are guys that I respect greatly. Colin Cattell, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you, Clayton. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, it's my pleasure, and anytime I can talk gold and store of value and understanding that market better, and helping our audience, it's always a treat here. And man, boy, are you at the front of this. So I have to ask you before we dive into some specifics of the market and where things are going right now, what your company is doing, how did you fall in love with gold as the thing that you were going to sink your teeth into, literally?
Yeah. Well, I kind of say it happened by default. So actually back in about 2001, I would have been 11 years old. And my dad at the time was a rocket scientist working for NASA and Lockheed Martin. And he came home one day and decided that he wanted to start investing in commodities. He had always kind of had a penchant for finding things that were out of favor and interesting. And at the time, I was mowing lawns and making something like $15,000 a summer. And I thought I was doing great. And very quickly, he starts coming home, telling me how he's made $100,000 in a day on these junior penny stocks up in Canada, basically. So, you know, very quickly, mowing the lawn went out the window. I didn't really care about that much anymore. And I have very fond memories of taking walks with him, kind of like 1 or 2 hours a night. And would just ask him questions, and he'd tell me about what happened during the day. And probably a lot of it went over my head at the time. But once I got out of school, so that would have been kind of around 2011-12, I decided that kind of mining was what I knew, and certainly from his help. And mining was once again out of favor. 2013, gold was out of favor. And I started putting a team together and building some different companies. So that's a bit of the story.
Wow. I grew up mowing lawns, but I wish I would have had that little, literally like gold nugget of information. I could have said, I'm not mowing lawns anymore, but that's what I used to do with my summers for many, many years. So you certainly got the luck of that stick. So let's talk about central banks. We had news last week, last week when we heard from Jerome Powell on central banks, they're doing everything right now they can do to print money. We're talking hyperinflation. We're seeing big investors, value investors, people like Michael Burry. We're seeing people like Bill Gates empty a lot of different stocks and moving into more value investments, store of value like gold and silver. So let's talk about where you think all of this currency creation is coming from right now. It looks like the central bank has created 25% of all the currency ever created happened in the year 2020. Like, I want my audience to like wrap their heads around that for a second. 25% of all of the currency created was created last year. How does this relate to commodities, gold, silver, et cetera?
Yeah, I was thinking about this yesterday and I heard that exact same fact. So I'm happy you dropped that. As a gold investor, I always have to be looking on the side of inflation because more dollars out there should relate to higher prices for everything. And commodities are the furthest thing out from market. They go into everything that we use or that we make. And so at some point you see the commodity prices get affected. And what I was thinking about yesterday is all the fundamentals were in place. And then we got hit with this COVID thing last year. And nobody expected it, obviously. And the Fed had to do what the Fed has to do, which is they had to go in and try their best to pump money into the system. And like you just pointed out, they've pumped so much money into the system. And I think what we're seeing is a lot of distortions in the market. And you've got the stock market up until very recently hitting all-time highs, people buying that. I know you guys are big in crypto investing. That's been a huge spot to be in. But it's probably attracting even more capital because people are really excited about seeing the money that's being made. And you know, they've got money to put in it. And then real estate. I'm based in Puerto Rico. You can see the water a little bit behind me here. And when I got here 3 years ago, the market was illiquid. I just sold a piece of property in a matter of 24 hours that sat on the market for 4 years when I picked it up. So what we're seeing is money's rushing into everything. And oddly, gold has performed pretty well, but it hasn't had that moment of everybody really rushing into it. And what I keep telling myself is through every cycle, which we've been through and since gold's existed, since ancient times, it always does the same exact thing. Trying to dissect exactly why it's moving and how it's moving right now is kind of a tough thing to do. But at some point, people are going to really come to gold hard, I believe. And I kind of have some theories around why that is. But in the meantime, most other commodities starting last year really began to perform well. And one indicator I always look at is the US dollar versus the Canadian dollar. Our neighbors to the north, their economy is based around oil and metals. And every time commodities move up and gold eventually moves up, the Canadian dollar kind of tends to come to par with the US dollar. And it's been moving in that direction. The Canadian dollar's moved, I think, 20% in the last year. And so we're seeing the price of the commodities, those input costs, are really starting to hit and go up. And you know, the more dollars that are out there, I would fully expect to see those commodities, the prices continue to move up.
Interesting, interesting. So that's your opinion. Well, that's fact, right? You're looking at these data points. What about, I mean, as this inflation period rages right now, what about your own sort of personal feeling on this? Where do you stand as an investor?
I feel very comfortable in the gold space. And I think that's probably because that's where all my businesses are. And that's just something I'm very comfortable with. But you know, my one concern is at some point this party comes to an end. And I know your channel and your audience is always interested about how to stay ahead of that and how to protect yourself in the event that these things stop working. And, you know, I think this exuberance that's happening right now is pouring into a lot of these things. But as soon as that slows down, even, I'm not saying there's going to be some type of a market crash. As soon as that slows down, people don't have the euphoria every day of, oh, my goodness, my Robinhood account is up again. And that's when people come back to gold. It's, you know, oftentimes referred to as a relic and a little bit boring, but once it starts working, everybody knows about it. Everybody sees gold every day. You go to CNN or Bloomberg or whatever you're going to, and gold's quoted right across the top there. And, you know, as soon as people see that moving, it's going to be a rush. You know, the gold market, in my opinion, is going to really start to fly here. And I feel very comfortable that I'm in this position of being in the gold space right now.
Yeah. And it's interesting when you look at these prices. I want to get your take on that. We're looking at about this afternoon. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm sure you have it right in front of you. What's the price right now as we talk? 17?
I think it's 1770. I'm embarrassed. I don't have it in front of me right now.
I figured like you probably have all the charts right in front of you. Yeah, I usually do too. Yeah. My screen is blocked. So, but yeah, 1770. I mean, it's just, and it's been hanging out there. And, you know, number of analysts we've had on the show seeing it hitting 2000 as this hyperinflation continues to rise. 2000. Where, I mean, I don't know if you want to give a price target, but where do you see gold going?
I feel comfortable gold in the next few years is going to be well above 2000. I think kind of 5000 is not out of the realm of possibility. And what I say to people, because people go, oh my goodness, that's really crazy, $5,000 gold. But remember, back in 2001, gold was at $250 an ounce. And by 2011, we were almost at $2,000. So you're looking at an 8x move. And, you know, people say, oh, if gold goes that high, the world's a place I don't want to live in. It's not true. It just means that the dollar has lost some strength due to inflation. And I believe gold's going to $5,000. I really do. And, wow. And probably in the next few years.
Wow. That's amazing. And you say, you know, you say when you talk to people, they're surprised. Wow, gold costing $5,000 an ounce, you know. But you got to think about it. For 4,000 years, it's sustained as a store of value in real estate and gold and silver. And like these things have been the constant and pressure, you know, and high priced artwork as well. But it's been there forever. And now you get onto the scene, you get sort of excited about cryptocurrency and everyone's jumping into Ethereum, Dogecoin and all of this stuff. Do you think that that's why we're seeing gold prices still hang out around that 1770 range?
I know that that has been brought up several times. I don't think so. It was obviously a raging debate. And, you know, first of all, let me start with crypto. I think it's possibly the most amazing thing that is going to happen in our lifetimes. And if it works, as we theorize that it could, you know, it's going to be life changing. But I don't think we need to pit crypto against gold, because gold's established, like you said, it's been around for 4,000 years. And remember, gold as a market is about $10 trillion. It's been stable around that number for the last couple of years. Crypto right now, incredibly, has gone from zero to, I think it's $2 trillion as of the last month. But put that all in perspective, you've got a global equity market of $100 trillion and the bond market is three times that. So crypto does not need to be taking the life out of gold in order to have $2 trillion of inflows. I think the two actually kind of stand on their own. They do have some similarities. They have the ability to kind of accomplish the same thing. But I think you'll be surprised that maybe gold and crypto at some point move together. And they might not be quite as correlated as people think.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I feel like when you get all these new retail investors, young, they're seeing seeing Elon Musk tweeting about Dogecoin and Mark Cuban tweeting about it or on the Ellen Show and all of this stuff. And so gold is a store of it's there. It's like the strong, it's been there, right? And then you get the flashy crypto, and so that's why there's a lot of movement over there. And maybe not. Maybe that's not why the price is sitting there, but I think it's still an amazing opportunity right now for gold as this heads its march up to $2,000, $5,000. Let's talk about Nevada. So you're in Puerto Rico, but of course, Nevada is where it's at. It's the gold capital of the world. Give our viewers who aren't familiar about why Nevada is so important as a gold capital.
For sure. So Nevada, if it were its own country, would be the fourth largest producer on the planet of gold. I had the opportunity to go to Nevada several years ago, back when my dad first started investing, and it's just mind-blowing. You drive up what's called either the Battle Mountain Trend or the Carlin Trend, and these are like the elephant trends, and you see these holes in the earth in the middle of the desert with these machines that are just massive in scale and these operating plants that are massive. And this is where gold production happens. In terms of endowments, if you look at the United States, where did geology put the gold? Well, California is number one, but California is a very established place with things like technology. So their money does not need to come from resources. There's also a big movement there against mining, and you have a huge population. So you move over next, and Nevada is certainly the second best endowed gold state. And as such, the largest gold companies in the world, Newmont and Barrick, both of them, their headquarters are effectively in Nevada. That's where a lot of their production is. How I got into Nevada, well, about 5 years ago in 2015, gold was out of favor. Very few people were interested. In fact, those big companies like Newmont and Barrick were in dire straits. Their finances were not in a good position with gold prices down. And I started a company called Nevada King. And Nevada King is now a public company. And what we did is it was very strategic. We went into the main trend, the Battle Mountain Trend. And in good times, when gold is up, this entire trend is owned, it's staked by these big companies. But because things had gotten so bad, we were able to go in and stake huge amounts of ground. To the point that we're now the fourth largest landholder in the entire state of Nevada. In fact, we've been the fastest growing landholder in the United States the last 3 years for gold.
That's crazy. So I want to talk about that. I mean, what you did, I love this about your company. And folks who are watching right now, I'm bullish on what you guys have done. I mean, one of your companies, you have rallied 400% in the past 6 months. So you guys should definitely pay attention to this. But when you guys stay, for our audience that isn't familiar with the staking process, this is, to me, it's like an antique way of doing it, isn't it? But you guys did it the old fashioned way. Like you got on what, ATVs, and you drove around the desert, literally planting flags to stake claims. Is that how this works?
That's pretty accurate. I could droll on for a long time, but I'll be succinct. In the United States, the process for staking ground means making a claim, and anything you find on that ground is yours, goes back to what was formed in the mid-1800s when the Comstock Lode, the famous Comstock Lode, was discovered right outside of California in Nevada. And they came up with these laws. And basically what you do is you go around with five posts. So there's one post on each corner. And it's a 20-acre parcel, and you hammer the post in, and then you put what's called a monument post, which is essentially in the center of those four. And you put your name, it's like so antiquated, it's crazy, but you put your name on a piece of paper in like a little camera cylinder, like a film cylinder. And then you go and you go to the Bureau of Land Management office and you register it. You say, hey, this is Nevada Kings. And as long as you pay the government an annual fee, that is yours. So a lot of jurisdictions now just, you know, this might be interesting, have moved to what's called online staking. And this is like in Canada, you just pull your credit card out and you highlight a whole area on the map. Like we're the largest landholder in all of Newfoundland in our other company. And we simply went online one night with an Amex card, $180,000, and boom, staked. Well, in Nevada, 4 years. So wow. It's a huge barrier to entry. Yeah.
Wow. So it took you 4 years to do all this by hand, finding these land. So the incredible. So the fourth largest land package in Nevada, you guys did it the hard way by driving around out there and pounding these stakes in there. It sounds so amazing to me. It's like a Western movie or something. It's crazy. So on the team, and I got to ask you just the people that are involved in this, who is Paul Matysik?
Yeah. So Paul is a superstar in the space. I've learned so much from this guy. I had the fortune of meeting him about 3 years ago. So Paul has sold, his biography says he sold his last five companies in the last decade for $2.3 billion. That actually needs to be updated because he's now in the process of selling his sixth company, which is called Gold X, for I think $350 million. But in any case, it's hard to find somebody like Paul that's had a string of successes. He knows what to pick. He knows how to get stuff done. And Paul is the executive chairman and co-founder of Nevada King. So this is like his main focus. Yeah, incredible to have him on the team.
Wow, that's pretty nice. So for our audience here, what are some of the major catalysts right now for Nevada King, your company? What are and what are your ticker symbols in the United States and in Canada?
Yeah, so the catalysts are as follows. And the way to think about it is we've essentially gone through three stages. The first stage we talked about, we spent 4 years staking. We did that at a time when nobody else cared. Now the sentiment has been changing. Over the last 6 months, we've had three major gold companies enter or re-enter the state, companies that have been absent from the state for the past decade. So we're seeing money come back in. And also the opportunity to stake is somewhat behind us. We've done all that work. We feel confident having the size ground package. So now my job is to bring attention to the company and create tension. And what I mean by creating tension is we're going to go and find our best targets, and we're going to go and try and find some serious amount of gold. And if we can find a serious amount of gold or find indications of a big gold deposit, these are the kind of things that are worth billions of dollars. And I like to say that anytime you're building a resource company, you need to be thinking of a billion-dollar potential, because this is high risk. It's a lot of work. And you want to make sure that the reward is asymmetric to the amount of effort that you're putting in. Our other company that we started in 2015 just hit $1 billion market cap yesterday, Newfound Gold. Major, major gold discovery. The difference there is that's in a new camp in Newfoundland. It's not known as a big gold spot. Whereas Nevada King, we've gone into the most established gold jurisdiction anywhere on the planet. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be drilling. We're going to be looking for gold. We're going to be putting news out to the market. And that kind of all has started in the last couple weeks. The ticker symbol is NKG.V, Nevada King. So
that's great. We've got that right here on the screen. Well, fascinating. I'd love to have you come back on, talk gold markets, see how your progress is. And when you guys strike gold, let us know. I want to hear about it. Well, I guess we'll hear about it in the news, but I'd love to have you come on and talk about it and take us through that process. This is fascinating to me. Thank you so much for joining us, Colin. I appreciate it.
All right, Clayton. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
And take a look at gold right now. So just even throughout the show, you know, it's up again, almost a point. You know, up 17%, and continues to climb. So continuing, and look at silver also up today as well. I'd love to get your thoughts on that. And if you guys have taken the plunge on that, here's some gold prices for you. Well, Warren Buffett over the weekend had a lot to say about cryptocurrency, Robinhood, so much more. He was, I don't know, maybe he's just, he's, you know, he's in his older age now, and he's just like, you know, I'm not pulling any punches. You want to know how I feel about these things? This is how I feel. I'm not a big fan of this retail space. He says, you know, there's the stocks only go up crowd, and then there's Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett, you know, and his longtime business partner, Charlie Munger, who were back. They haven't been back on the stage together in quite a while, 90 years old and 97 years old, respectfully. They pushed back on some of these big trends in investing during the company's annual shareholder meeting on Saturday. It was interesting to get their take on cryptocurrency, to hear what they think about this retail investing move, certainly on with Robinhood and GameStop and all of this. Here are just a few takeaways that I had. Bitcoin. Munger said, of course, I hate Bitcoin. He said, I hate the Bitcoin success. And he said, cryptocurrency's used for criminal enterprises. He says, I think I should say modestly, the whole damn development is disgusting and contrary to the interests of civilization, which I just don't understand. I don't get how you get that thought, that this is contrary to civilization when government fiat currency continues to collapse. Again, David and I talk about this here on the show all the time, that no fiat currency in world history has ever survived. And here, for the very first time, you have a new monetary system, which is Bitcoin. You have a new monetary system, which is decentralized, not run by any state government, not any one government. And if something goes offline, it doesn't matter, because no government controls it and can just print whatever they want. So I just don't understand that. But here are Berkshire Hathaway CEO and partner Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett on these questions.
Now that the crypto market overall is valued at $2 trillion, do you still consider cryptos as worthless artificial gold?
Well, I knew there'd be a question on Bitcoin or crypto. And I thought to myself, well, I've watched these politicians dodge questions all the time, you know, and I always find it kind of disgusting when they do it. But the truth is, I'm going to dodge that question because we probably got hundreds of thousands of people watching this that own Bitcoin, and we probably got two people that are short. So we got a choice of making 400,000 people mad at us and unhappy, and or making two people happy. And that's just a dumb equation. So I thought about it. We had a governor one time in Nebraska, and a long time ago, but he would get a tough question, you know, what do you think about property taxes, or, you know, what should we do about schools? And he'd look right at the person, he'd say, I'm all right on that one. And then he'd just walk off. Well, I'm all right on that one, and maybe we'll see how Charlie is.
And Charlie will tell him more truthful here.
Well, those who know me well are just waving the red flag of the bull. Of course I hate the Bitcoin success. And I don't welcome a currency that's so useful and to kidnappers and extortionists and so forth, nor do I like just shuffling out a few extra billions and billions and billions of dollars to somebody who just invented a new financial product out of thin air. So I think I should say modestly that I think the whole damn development is disgusting and contrary to the interests of civilization.
And I can't believe he actually said the words out of thin air with a straight face.
I know.
Like, what are they doing right now with the U.S. dollar? They're printing it out of thin air.
Right. Exactly. I think it's crazy.
I do want to say that Warren missed a golden opportunity. He could have said, I'm going to doge that question.
Hey, he's just pretty witty. I'm surprised he didn't think of that one. I'm going to doge that question. They didn't ask, bring up Dogecoin, but she did ask a lot of good questions. You know, I just think it's funny to think that, and Bill Maher went on and on about this week too on HBO, and you know, this idea that, you know, Bitcoin, it's fake, it's made up, it's, you know, you can say that all you want. But this is the future of our monetary system. And the amount of things and projects right now being built on the back of Ether, Ethereum, right? So you have Bitcoin on the one side, you have Ethereum on the other. And yes, it might be number two to Bitcoin's number one. That's fine. But look at Ethereum. Visa, talking about building their platform. their transaction platform on Ethereum, Visa, on Ethereum, you know, on Ether.
When if you think about it, you know, the Bitcoin, the way that they mine it, it's finite. And currency has to be finite. It has to have some kind of value that is based on, you know, how long it can last. Whereas right now, the US dollar is infinite. They can print as much as they want. And they're printing, I don't even know how much they're printing these days every month, but they print money like there's nothing backing it. Bitcoin is backed by labor. The US dollar is backed by nothing.
Exactly. And that's the thing. We know how much Bitcoin exists. And we can just continue to push out US dollars. Again, talk to any expert in the financial world. Ask them, do they have any cash? Are they keeping their money in cash? And the answer is absolutely not. They're not keeping their money in cash. I mean, look what Warren Buffett, you know, I don't know how many of you watched the video that I did yesterday on Warren Buffett and his gold mistake. How many of you watched that? If you haven't watched that, go check out that video after today's show. But I talk about Warren Buffett's huge mistake on gold. You know, he kept money in cash. He kept Berkshire Hathaway money in cash when he had $130 billion. And 20 years ago, when he had $70 billion, even if he would only have used half of that money, and instead of sitting it in U.S. dollars, if he would have put that in gold, he would now run the largest company in the world. It would be $3 trillion company. It would be $3 trillion, three times the size of Apple. But he kept it in U.S. dollars. Now imagine if that was even put in gold, or imagine if it was put in Bitcoin. And look what Tesla just did. Look what Elon Musk just did by investing $1.5 billion in Bitcoin. Their profits exploded as a result of it.
So, I told you that last week or whatever when I was talking about Bitcoin that had I listened to Ron Paul in 2012 and invested the $20,000 that I had, I would have $167 million right now.
So I guess you didn't learn your lesson. But nope. But then you didn't learn your lesson last week when I said hold Bitcoin and you're like, oh, I got to sell it. See, and you sold it. And if you just would have held it for another few days, you would have made your profit. You would have been up.
Yeah. See?
Maybe third time's a charm.
Maybe third time. I might try Ethereum a little bit. Where do you actually get Ethereum? Like, how do you do that? How do you get into that?
I mean, anywhere. I mean, Ethereum is such a popular, you know, coin. You can buy it anywhere, really. But Coinbase, et cetera. But
public?
No, not yet. Public is for just for stocks. It's not public is not crypto just yet. But you can actually, gotcha. If you're on Webull, you can do it on Webull. But I do it on Binance. So I'm a Binance guy. That's my platform. That, and I'm actually starting with Bybit. So I'll have some more info on Bybit real soon as well. So some really fascinating platforms with very low fees. So, but Ethereum you can get in on as this thing runs up. I mean, this is again exploded since last week, just up a ridiculous amount. Warren Buffett also talked about Robinhood. And this idea that, you know, this is just a platform for retail investors. He said it's taking advantage of the gambling instincts of society, and it isn't admirable. He says it creates its own reality for a while, and nobody tells you when the clock is going to strike 12, and everyone turns to pumpkins and mice, he said.
Is he? It sounds like he's talking about the U.S. dollar.
This idea of Robinhood, I mean, I think it's an interesting discussion to have, right? It's this idea that, He and I believe truly that Warren Buffett is all about wanting to get as many people involved in trading as possible. That's been sort of his lifelong mission, right? Is to like get people trading, get people learning about investing in businesses, and empowering you to take control of your financial future, right? He has a very similar mission, I think, to mine by doing this show. But where I disagree is this idea that you lump everyone together and you basically say that this platform, this Robinhood platform, by making it flashy and fun, then everyone's going to get screwed. And I think he's right in part. I think, you know, social media and this, you know, Reddit forums and so forth, driving people to jump into GameStop and AMC and things like that. Yes, people got burned. People got screwed. You know, people don't know what they're doing. That's one thing. But I think to some degree, he's right about Robinhood. You know, Robinhood plays into this. Robinhood released a statement basically saying, we don't think it's right for you to insult retail investors. We've created a platform which decentralizes and makes it accessible, democratizes trading. It allows everyone to get involved in this. And of course they're going to say that, right? They're making so much money off of people who shouldn't be trading, people who don't have any education about what's going on in the markets, and they get into this stuff. And Robinhood knows that. So they can come out and play the role of like the populist and be like, we're defending our right to trade. And oh yeah. But then why did you then stop people from actually buying into GameStop when it was going crazy and only allowing people to sell? Like, if you're so in favor of the little guy, then why did the little guy get screwed when you decided to pull the lever back on people being able to sell, you know, sell GameStop or buy GameStop? So, you know, I think it's nice and hypocritical of Robinhood to be talking out of both sides of its mouth. But and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Drop me a comment below. You know, is Warren Buffett right about Robinhood? Is he right about crypto? What about Charlie Munger? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. He also talked about.
I would argue that you shouldn't take advice from somebody who. I mean, granted, he is a billionaire, okay, but if he's advising people to invest in the U.S. dollar, then that's disingenuous because, like, those guys have to know. I mean, they follow trends. They look at everything. They have to know how unstable the dollar is. I mean, they have to know that it's the only reason our dollar is keeping any kind of value right now is because oil is trading in it. Once oil is not traded in the dollar, which there are other countries fighting to get to where they don't trade oil in the dollar. Once that happens, guess what? That's when we're going to be we're going to be burning them in fireplace like the Deutschmark.
Yeah, or the Venezuelan dollar right now. What is it, the Bolivar, which is worthless, mm-hmm. Absolutely, totally worthless. I don't think he's saying, you know, invest in the U.S. dollar. I think what he's saying is, that the traditional structures, like, we should be operating within these traditional structures. But how can we operate in this traditional structure when it's?
But don't you think when he says the traditional structure, that all revolves around the dollar. I mean, every structure that those guys know revolves around the U.S. dollar.
Right. And I think, but how do you feel about inflation? How do you feel about, he didn't want to comment when asked about, you know, Biden's like tax policy and so forth and corporate taxes and state taxes. And Charlie Munger jumped in on that question about taxes and said, I would never move because of taxes. Like I'm not going to even move across the street to save my kids $300,000 in taxes. Like I wouldn't do it. I'm not going to move to Puerto Rico just for that purpose. I'm not going to move to another state. But this runaway inflation is going to happen. And we're going to start to hear the Fed talking about it in July at their July meeting. They're going to start to talk about taking effects, and we may even see inflation running even hotter than 3%. Now, a lot of businesses will be fine with that, but guess who gets screwed? You know, the little guy. Because now the cost of things goes up and the money's not there to support you. So, you know, that's what this show is about. I want you to have this financial education so you can make moves that are protecting you against the U.S. dollar, that are protecting you against this inflation. It's coming. It's coming. So if your money is sitting in a bank account, if it's sitting in some U.S. savings account, you're going to be losing money. You already are losing money, especially as we head towards, advanced negative interest rates. Top digital two. Oh, what was that? I missed that.
I can put it back up.
Beware of the Robinhood platform. They're starting to add more fees without telling you. I've closed my account for good due to Robinhood charge my account $12 per month if less than a $25,000 investment. Really? I didn't know that. They just recorded record profit. Like their earnings, you know, they because of all the move data that they're selling, that's how they make their money. They don't make their money off of trades. They make their money off of selling your data, basically, to how you're going to trade. That's how they make their money. And so they just saw like record profits. Apple also up this morning. Apple up 1.3%. I'm keeping my eye on this story because Apple is, you probably know a lot more about this fight than I do, but the Epic battle right now, makers of Fortnite, So I'm a heavy investor into Apple, and I bought more last week. I think the sales of these new iMacs are going to be fantastic. I think the sales of these new iPads are going to be off the charts, and I think they're going to sell a boatload of these AirTags. Those are like perfect little, like, you know, stocking stuffer kind of things. But they're in this court battle with Epic, and today they're in court today over this battle over Fortnite. And of course, Epic took the money or tried to go around the App Store. And do you know how this all unfolded? I remember I kind of tuned out because I wasn't a Fortnite player, but my son is huge into Fortnite. And the trial is set to begin today. All watchers seem to think Apple's going to walk away with this one pretty big.
Yeah, it was just basically they tried to circumvent the in-app purchases and stuff so that Apple didn't get 30% because, you know, Apple takes 30% of all. At least they did. I think they actually lowered that recently. In light of this, even though they'll probably win this suit, but they did actually go in and change some things in there because of this.
Yeah. But nevertheless, like, I think when they tried to take on the behemoth here. So I don't think Epic's going to win this one. Because if Epic wins this one, this upends Apple's entire structure, their App Store structure. It's a, you know, multi-billion dollar business on its own. Like, even take away the iPhone, take away all these other things for Apple, just that part of it, just their App Store would be a multi-billion dollar company on its own. And now if Epic wins this, that's going to totally shatter the way that the App Store pricing is set up. You know, they get 30% profits or whatever it is. Or is it 20 now or something? I don't know. Per developer.
I think they lowered it to something like that, 20 or.
Yeah. So I'm going to be watching that, but Apple is up early this morning, with some higher numbers. So did you order anything yesterday? It was April 30th. All the new iMacs and everything went on sale.
No, I'm going to wait. The only thing that I really want right now is the Apple TV, and maybe some AirTags. I'm still thinking about that. I have the Tile in my wallet, but I'm not really a fan of that. But I'm looking at the AirTags. I'm like, how in the heck would that fit in my wallet anyway? Yeah. Like, I don't think it's going to fit in my wallet.
They're tiny, but they're a little wide. They're like little wafers.
Yeah.
But I ordered an Apple TV as well.
Oh, I didn't think those launched until...
No, you can order it right now.
All right, I'm going to apple.com right now.
So guess what I do? But he gets me on I spend so much money on like camera gear and stuff like that. every day it's like something else that I need for the studio here. Yeah, but these new Macs, I think I know you're not a big fan of these Macs, but I love the colors on these things. And I think...
Well, Jennifer is. She's going to get one. She's like, she wants the bluish or the pinkish, whatever one's closest to pink or blue. Yeah. Like she'll get one of those.
Natalie loves the orange one. She's got like an orange rug in her office. Yeah, these things are going to be a hot seller.
Well, make sure you get her the 16 gigs of RAM if you get her one. Don't get her the 8.
Yeah, I would. Absolutely. Always go higher on the RAM. Always go higher on the RAM.
Yep.
Always.
If you can get more RAM, get more RAM.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, where are the AirTags here? AirTags. I want to show, you know, if you're not familiar with these AirTags, you lose your stuff, you know, put them on your key ring, and it just, you can find out exactly where your keys are using your phone. It uses augmented reality to like pinpoint it. So let's say you lost it in a field, you know, like you're out at a soccer game, your kid's soccer game, and you lost it, your keys in the grass, you'll never find it, right? But with these AirTags, it show you exactly where they are. Plus, it would have a little beeping sound, and you can track it, like walk right up to it, and it'll track it right with your phone. It tells you where you are. Like, go 20 feet to your right, go left. We lose keys all the time in this house. Yeah. So there you go. There's AirTags. So, let's see.
I'm going to use my Apple card to purchase it.
Oh, there you go. All right, well, get some rest, everyone. We've got a lot of news. This is going to be a very busy week. We're watching the Apple news right now. There's my old friend Kara Swisher on the telly. She's talking about Apple News right now. She's a great reporter, by the way. So you know, Apple versus Epic. We're going to be keeping our eye on gold. Be sure to check out. If you missed that video from last night that we published, go check that video out where we walk through. We show you what happens with this company, with Nevada King and with Warren Buffett. It's on our channel. Go check that out. And until next time, everyone, be safe, be kind to each other. Much love to all of you. And we will see you back here tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern time, everyone. Peace out.
Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.